Hello to all Earth citizens and welcome to my Conscious Coaching Podcast. This is Dr. Kianush, founder and creative director of MCCG. My Conscious Coaching Group is a non-political, non-religious 501c3 coaching nonprofit with initiatives in healthcare, leadership, and education with focus on emotional and spiritual intelligence. Our vision is to raise self and global awareness for a conscious mind through education and application of EQ and SQ. And our mission is to connect, collaborate, and partner with hospitals, academics, colleges, and medical schools and organizations to embrace growth, self-healing, and self-coaching to achieve well-being and peak performance of individuals and the team as a one connected whole. Today, we have a near and dear guest speaker, Dr. Janice Holden. Jan is a professor emerita at University of North Texas. She is also current president of IANS, International Association of Near-Death Studies, and author of the Handbook of Near-Death Experience. I need to mention that as a near-death experiencer myself, this topic is very critical to me as a human being, physician, and a coach. And I feel blessed to have Jan and her knowledge today with us about life and afterlife. Jan, it's a pleasure and a gift to have you on MCCG Podcast. Welcome.
It's wonderful to be here, Kianush. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for being here. Jan, please let us know, what else do you like our audience to know about you?
Well, I think you've actually hit some of the most important things. I was a counselor educator for 31 years at the University of North Texas. And that means that we prepared people to become licensed professional counselors, school counselors, and so forth. And during that time, my research focus was transpersonal phenomena, especially near-death experiences and after-death communication. So those two topics, I feel like I have expertise in.
Thank you for letting us know. So that's kind of your specialty, and I'm really grateful, you know, for your wisdom today here. Jan, what is the veridical perception in near-death experience? And since some of our listeners haven't heard this terminology before, can you just give us a brief definition of NDE, SDE, OBE, or STE, a spiritual transformational experience in general?
Okay, sure. Well, I like the term for all these kinds of experiences, transpersonal experiences, because it describes actually what happens, which is that the person in some way transcends, that's where the trans part comes, the usual personal limits of space, time, identity, or influence. So, for example, in a near-death experience, the person has the there can be any combination of these aspects, these three aspects of the experience. One aspect is the sense of leaving and or re-entering the body. Mm-hmm. Another aspect is being out, experiencing oneself, one's consciousness, to be outside the body, observing the material world. I call that the material aspect. Usually it's the material world around their physical body, but people can travel anywhere in near-death experiences. And then there's the third aspect of that I call the transmaterial aspect. And that's where the person goes to environments and meets with entities that are not of the material world. So people meet deceased loved ones, other spiritual beings, sometimes recognizable, sometimes not, and have things happen like their life review and so forth. Now, these three aspects can sort of overlap, but most typically, or in a really complete experience, the person feels themselves leave their body. They observe the material world from a position outside the body. They move into transmaterial domains, meet with transmaterial entities, and then they re-enter their physical body. So a shared death experience is when, and I should say near-death experiences occur in a variety of circumstances, usually involving illness or injury, and the person either is expected to die, or they might actually be in the first moments of cardiac arrest, and then, of course, get resuscitated, or they may be in an accident and very, you know, severely injured. Sometimes people even have the experience when they're just afraid of dying and they don't actually end up being injured in any way. And people are profoundly changed by these experiences. They change their psychological functioning, their physical functioning, their spiritual functioning, and even their social world changes. So they're very profound. In a shared death experience, a living person is typically at the deathbed, but not necessarily at the deathbed of a dying person. And the living person has some kind of shared experience of the dying person's death process. So, for example, a person might accompany the dying person toward a brilliant light, but then be told the living person has to go back. The dying person is going to go on into the light. Or a person might be sitting at the deathbed and have the room absolutely filled with this brilliant light at the moment that the dying person passes. Or the living person might actually be remote and get and have an experience of sharing the dying process or experiencing the dying person there in their room, wherever the living person is. So it's a variety of situations, but the main thing is that a near-death experiencer actually has the experience themselves of leaving their body and so forth. The shared death experiencer is a living person who shares in or witnesses somehow a dying person's process. And then in after-death communication, once the dying person has passed, a living person perceives the presence and communication with the dying person, with a deceased, or I prefer to say disembodied, because they're not really deceased according to the after-death communication experiencer. Yeah. You know, then they have that sense of communication with someone who has passed. So those are some of the end of life kinds of experiences that people can have. And to get to your main question about veridical perception. So people, especially who've had near-death experiences, after-death communication, they come back from these experiences changed. And near-death experiencers in particular often say that they learn in the near-death experience that our lives have purpose. Every one of us, our life has purpose. And the real purpose is for each of us to advance in our capacity to love, and also to acquire knowledge. That's a secondary purpose, but loving is the main goal of life. And this is a really important message, but humanity is not likely to take that message seriously if they think that near-death experiences are just the imaginations of a person's mind. We know that they're not hallucinations because they just don't have the same features that hallucinations have. But still, it's a subjective experience that in many cases can't be verified. But what happens in veridical perception is that during the NDE, the experiencer perceives something either in the material domain or the transmaterial domain that they couldn't have known through any normal physical means and is later verified as accurate. So I'll just give you one example from the material, one from the transmaterial, and then come back to why this is so important. A man is in surgery. He unexpectedly flatlines. and he leaves his body. He's watching everybody scurry around as they're trying to get his heart going again. And he sees his physician flapping his arms as if trying to fly. And he's thinking, what is that? Hmm. And, but then they resuscitate him. He's back in his body. Of course, this whole time he's never regained consciousness. His eyes have been taped shut. You know, he's completely anesthetized. They finish the surgery, take him to post-op. He regains consciousness. When he does, he tells his nurse what happened, what he saw. And this, it so happens that this occurred at the University of Virginia, where really the leading NDE researcher, Bruce Grayson, was on the faculty. And she called him, and he came over immediately. He interviewed the patient, and then he interviewed everybody who was in the operating room individually, finally leading up to the surgeon himself. And everybody confirmed that the surgeon does this thing about kind of looking like he's flapping his arms. And the surgeon explained he'd been trained internationally, and there they taught them that once they sterilize their hands, they put their hands on their chest, on their sterile gown, and then they back into the operating room. Their associates are doing all the preliminary opening the patient and everything. And when it's time for them to come and do their specialized part of the surgery, only then do they remove their hands from their chest. Mm-hmm. Well, in this case, the patient flatlined and everybody's kind of panicking. And so the surgeon is pointing with his elbow. And he's saying, move that tray, get that syringe and do this and do that. He's pointing with his elbows. So he looks like he's flapping his arms as if trying to fly. And it's the kind of thing that nobody talked about because it was just kind of something that this surgeon did that everybody knew. And nobody ever talked or said anything about it. It was just an idiosyncrasy. But how could the patient know that when he was actually dead while the surgeon was doing this pointing with his elbows? So that's a case of veridical perception. There's no way the patient could have known this unless you accept that his consciousness was outside his body perceiving the material world. And then in the transmaterial domain, there's a case of a young boy who was seriously ill in the hospital. This was in the days before cell phones. His parents were there keeping vigil. And after he had been critically ill at one point, lost consciousness, was in danger of dying, and yet he rallied and came back, regained consciousness. And once he was stabilized, the parents had been at the hospital for almost a full day. They finally went home to shower and rest and all that. And the thing is that when the boy regained consciousness, he told his parents that he had seen his older sister, and she had told him that she was going to stay where they were, but he was going to come back to his body. And the parents thought, you know, oh, okay, whatever, you know, mm-hmm. he was hallucinating, you know.
Yeah.
Well, when they got home, they found more than 20 messages on their answering machine from the university where the older sister was attending, because they were trying to reach the parents to let them know that the previous night she had died in a car crash, and she had died about an hour before the boy lost consciousness and had his near-death experience. So he knew that she had died before anybody else knew it. Hmm. He was there with her, and she told him, I'm staying, but you're going back. And so, again, no way on earth that he could have known that, except that he knew it from his near-death experience. So the reason that these are important, and there are over 100 cases like this in a book called The Self Does Not Die, which is about to come out in a few months with a second edition that's going to have another 20 cases, they really indicate that when the person says their consciousness is functioning outside their body, it really is. And therefore, the messages that the lessons that NDEers bring back have more credibility, and people can take more seriously the edict for us to use our life on this life on earth to advance in our capacity to love.
Yeah, I can completely relate with that, John. You just almost, you know, summarized the last 15 years of my life since I had the near-death experience, you know, and to my experience also, the consciousness continues, that sense of our I or our soul, that continues to be. And for sure, the experience has been transformational and transcending for me in many ways, as my background as a research pathologist at Johns Hopkins, I've changed when I came back, you know, after that experience and I started my coaching, you know, education and practice. And I felt that my purpose is different, and ending up, you know, to launching the coaching nonprofit and having the podcast here today with you. And I'm so glad that you brought these, you know, examples, you know, out. And I hear a lot of them as a facilitator, you know, in IANS, you know, gathering every week or every month when I do a group, but some of our audience maybe haven't heard this, and that was really interesting case here that I heard also. But we touched on talking about the healthcare. Why do you think that the physician or healthcare professionals and leaders and even coaches, therapists, or psychiatrists should know about this phenomena? And what's the research status on it? Because everyone needs the proof.
Yes, yes. Oh, my goodness. You've touched on such an important point here. So about 5 or 7 or 8 years ago, I can't remember how long ago, I did a study of near-death experiencers. And in the end, 88 near-death experiencers participated, and they reported on 188 of their experiences disclosing their near-death experience to a healthcare provider and reporting whether they found that experience of disclosure to be helpful or neutral or harmful. And the good news was that more than half of the people said that the experience was helpful. But the bad news was that 33% of the people said that they had a harmful experience. And what was harmful was that either the healthcare provider that they were disclosing to didn't recognize their experience as a near-death experience. They were sort of like, you what? You know, that sort of reaction.
Yeah.
Or they dismissed it as, you know, a hallucination or, you know, something else, a drug effect, you know, just minimizing its importance. Or they diagnosed the person with a mental disorder based only on the report of the near-death experience, which, let me say, that there is no support from research to do that. There is no relationship between near-death experiences and mental disorder. We know that very clearly from research. Or the healthcare provider demonized the experience and thought that it was somehow evil or of the devil, which, again, there is no support for that. The support is just the opposite, that the experience in the long term contributes to spiritual development. It's very spiritually benevolent and beneficial. But there are some people who, you know, misunderstand the experience. And first of all, it's important for a healthcare provider, if someone is describing an NDE, a lot of times people don't know that what they experienced was an NDE. And it can be, first of all, very helpful to label it for the patient, not force the label, but to say, it sounds like you might have had what's called a near-death experience. And if you'd like to know more about other people who've had this kind of experience, I can give you some resources, some online or print resources to learn more about them. And then that alone validates the experience and tells people this is a thing. Other people have had something similar. You're not alone. And then to inquire, you know, like, what do you make of that experience? What does it mean to you? And help the person begin to reflect on its meaning, because as I'm going to guess you will confirm, the integration process can take quite a while. Research suggests an average of 7 years. So some people are a lot quicker than that, and some people take even longer. For some people, it's just a truly ongoing process. And so we know that a first disclosure experience is the nature of it, whether it's helpful or harmful, is likely to set the experiencer on a trajectory of either healthy integration or an unhealthy kind of stuck psychological, psycho-spiritual process that feels unresolved to them. So it's critically important for healthcare providers to know and be able to label and not demonize, not pathologize, and rather facilitate a healthy integration process.
Yeah, I definitely would have appreciated that when I had this experience like about 15 years ago, which, as you mentioned, I even didn't tell my husband when I had that, because I, as a physician, I even didn't know what was that. All I knew that was real, and how wonderful it would have been. Even the patients, you know, would have been educated with a pamphlet about the near-death experience and the possibility that this can happen, not only the physician or the healthcare provider, but also, you know, when the patients, you know, get admitted, have some knowledge about the possibility of having a near-death experience. And if I had that, it would have saved like many years of my life, you know, and the confusion of what was that and what happened. And then I started, you know, reading, you know, and research about it until I found the International Association of Near-Death Studies. And finally, the light, you know, came over all the confusion and I found my way. Thank you so much, Jan.
I'm sorry you had that experience, but I'm very glad that you found your way to IANS and that you found it so helpful. And in fact, we have a pamphlet just like that about, you know, what is a near-death experience, that any healthcare provider could go online and download it or point their patient to it online.
Exactly. Yeah. So, we are going to mention that at the end. So, for our healthcare providers, what are the resources they can have, and all the individuals that they can have it for the friends, you know, family members that had this experience to educate themselves and the others about it. And just touching on that, what does the new experiencer should know themselves first? Because some people like me, like 15 years ago, they had no idea what happened to them and they are having this experience, and I hope they are listening to our podcast. What they should know first about themselves, and then what their relatives, spouses and parents, children or their network should know, and how they can help them. And since I'm in a coaching profession now, so how does the coaches can be helpful both to experiencer and their relatives or their medical care team?
Yeah. Well, I mentioned some things, but they bear repeating, that the first thing experiencers should know is that this, what they experienced, is a recognized phenomenon. It's a thing that, and they're not alone in having had an experience like that. And that it's not related to mental disorder, even though the experience can be, as you said, typically experiencers say that the experience was absolutely real or even more real than our normal sense of reality.
Exactly.
But it's an introduction to an alternate reality, very different from the material reality we're used to. And so people can, it can be confusing, surprising, even very disorienting to have had the experience. And unfortunately, because our culture doesn't prepare people for the possibility of having an experience like this, it's getting a little better that, you know, the word about NDEs is getting out, but there's still a lot of people who really don't know about this phenomenon. So, knowing that it's unrelated to mental disorder, knowing that it even though it can be temporarily disruptive, it's eventually usually very contributing to spiritual development. And so it's a beneficial experience when the person can integrate it. Now, I should hasten to say that about 10% of experiences are predominantly emotionally distressing, and those can be a little more challenging to deal with the after effects. But what research shows is that eventually even those experiences end up with the same beneficial after effects, just a little different path to get there. So that's important to know as well. And there is in some ways as what might seem like bad news, in that we know from research that if someone is married when they have a near-death experience, they're at much greater risk of becoming divorced. And it's not because there is more discord in the relationship. It's because the a near-death experiencer's values change. They become less materialistic, more concerned about others, more service-oriented. And those are not values that tend to be dominant in our culture. So two people married, they usually have fairly similar values, at least in the Western world. Then one of them has a near-death experience, and their values, if their values, the value changes, represent a diversion from their partner's values, that couple is more likely to divorce. There are a couple of cases where the other partner that didn't have the near-death experience actually had slightly more NDE-like values to start with. So then the partner has the near-death experience, their values converge with their partner, and those marriages continue happier than ever. So it's important to realize that these experiences can disrupt people's social lives. People sometimes change careers, they change friends, they change religious affiliation. Some people become less involved in organized religion because they find that organized religion just isn't big enough for what they now know. And just that it's an adjustment process.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I completely relate to that. And I was lucky that I had a supportive, you know, spouse and son, you know, and family, and came with an open-minded and curious mind, you know, to understand what is the experience. And I remember I finally told my husband after a week after I discharged from hospital, and he's a scientist, he's a physician too, and he gave it all the medical possibility. Maybe it's a vasovagal symptom, maybe it's just the anesthesiology, you know, medication, as you mentioned, and all of these, but still was open-minded to it. And actually, I owe finding Ayaz through the interview that he heard on the NPR radio on his way to work. And that was Barbara Bradley, I think. She had this interview on her book Fingerprints of God about the NDE and the research on the NDE and near-death experiencers and all the STEs. And he came home and told me about that interview. And he said, you know, the story you were telling me, I heard this lady on the NPR, and she has a book about it. Maybe you should read it and get more information on it. And that opened so many doors to me, because I just found all the Hopkins, you know, research on the NDEs that they had done, and many more, you know, resources and information, and even IANS through that. So it's really important that, you know, our relatives, our surrounding, you know, are the people we are in touch with, them to be educated and know about this phenomena. And it's a fortunate, you know, resource to have. And just being all said, Jan, do you think we can consider this phenomena a gift or additional insight or sense of reality of afterlife, or we still need more proof? Because I feel I'm gifted gifted with so many, as you mentioned, other insight. And I not only have sixth sense now, I have seventh, maybe eighth, and sometimes ninth sense too. Just knowing, you know, knowing the things that are happening, just that deep sense of intuition has become more strengthened. And just the fact of just seeing people through their souls. And for me, these are the gifts that I believe I have, you know, earned it with this experience. What's your opinion?
Well, first of all, that's one of the really wonderful after effects that can happen is this deepening of intuition, which also I think probably expresses in a greater sense of empathy and compassion for other people's suffering. And it's really a wonderful development. As to whether near-death experiences point to the survival of consciousness after death, I would say yes, they definitely point to it. And veridical perception is underscores that. However, we have to remember from a scientific point of view that near-death experiencers never stay dead. All of the accounts we have are people who return to physical life. So from a purely scientific point of view, we can't say for sure that consciousness would continue once the body is permanently, irreversibly dead. Now, personally, I believe that consciousness does continue. In fact, I would say that I know it does because of some experiences, transpersonal experiences I've had, not specifically a near-death experience, but other types of experiences. As Pim van Lommel, he's an important NDE researcher from the Netherlands, a cardiologist, he talks about the convergence of evidence from near-death experiences, after-death communication, shared death experiences. You know, when you take, and mediumship, when you take all of these, the research evidence together, it makes a very strong case that there is an afterlife, and that when we die from this physical life, we actually, our consciousness doesn't die. Only the physical body dies and our consciousness continues. So I think it's that convergence of evidence that provides the strongest support for the idea of an afterlife.
Yeah, and it does continue to my experience as well. Not only continue, we all become one consciousness. We all have been one, as I wrote in my book and I mentioned in my interview with Lee Whitting from IANS, you know, radio, and it's on our podcast. If the audience want to know about my story, they can listen to it. So we all continue consciously as a one whole consciousness. And I think that's a good place to end our conversation. But before we leave, I just want to ask you that how our audience should know more about the resources that are available to them, the upcoming, you know, IANS conference in Washington, D.C., which is my hometown, and I have the honor to be chosen as a speaker there. So can you just let us know a little bit more on that?
Yeah, well, certainly for the anybody who wants to learn about this phenomenon, near-death experiences and related experiences, because we also talk about after-death communication, shared death experiences, and so forth there, is invited to the conference. It's open to the public. It's over Labor Day weekend. And you can learn more by going to www.iands.org. IANS.org. And you can also find other resources about these phenomena there. And for my own work, I have a website, janholden.com. And anyone is welcome to visit my website and see some of my other interviews and articles that I've published on my research and things like that.
Thank you so much, Jan, for all the wisdom and your time and contribution. It was a pleasure and an honor to have you today, and I appreciate that.
Oh, and a pleasure for me as well, Kanush. Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful day. goodbye to our listeners, and remember, one podcast at a time. Thank you for being with us for another one. You can visit our website at myconscious.org to learn more about us, or write to us at coach@myconscious.org. And please stay connected by following us on our social media platforms, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, not to miss our upcoming episodes and events. Love and light from all of us to you. Make it a great day, everyone.